are live across all of our destinations, at least for now, if we don't get kicked off by the Facebook pages people today like we did yesterday. And this is episode 3,777. Wednesdays are usually interview days. I didn't have one booked this week. I was kind of coasting toward the end of the year, and I thought about it. And a bunch of you guys emailed me, too, and said, hey, you did that really great show with Ken Daniels about Thanksgiving dinner. Well, we have Christmas dinner, too, stupid, so why don't you bring Ken back on? So I reached out. He said, you know me, brother, I'm in. So welcome back to the show, Ken.
How are we doing, everybody? I heard Jack called out for this, and I was like, let's do it. I honestly had more responses on my emails from my website than I had in a long time. Everybody reached out for Thanksgiving. I hope everyone had a good Christmas dinner and all those little things that you guys were trying. I was happy to hear all the good stuff and the failures too, which always teaches you things. So
cool, man. Well, hey, I'm glad you took the time to be here today. Top Cone wants to know if we're going to suggest a Boar's Head Christmas meal. I don't think he means the company.
Well,
you know, like you go to the deli and get Boar's Head roast beef or Boar's Head ham. I think he means a pig head for, I don't know, man. I'm pretty rustic, but my family ain't going to handle that.
You know what's funny is we did, at a Crunchy Mama Farms, we did a bunch of those Idaho pasture ones, and I took a pig's head and I made head cheese out of it. Traditional head cheese out of it. And that's a really cool technique. That's longer than we could discuss here on this segment. But if you guys are ever interested in some head cheese, and that's not like a, you know, cheese like queso, it's like a congealed meat using all the meats from a pig's head. It's pretty fun, pretty interesting. So, no, actually on that note though, I was, you guys, if people are interested, I'm kind of curious what people are, I have a new venture I'm probably going to start next year. It's kind of segued into this butcher from this butchery thing. I think I'm going to go to taxidermy school and become a taxidermist. I think it's just kind of one of those skill sets that are kind of leaning towards. When I hear boar's head, I'm thinking, man, I would love to get my head on a boar's head just to stuff and mount, man. So,
yeah. So the one thing we're not going to be talking about today, just for everybody out there, is going to be making a turkey. Yeah. I know a lot of people make turkey for Thanksgiving and Christmas. If you do, we're not anti-turkey. We did that already like 4 or 5 weeks ago. You're going to cook there's no difference in the way you'll cook your turkey. So if you want to know turkey stuff and turkey stuffing, go listen to the Thanksgiving show, which is, again, just a few weeks ago. We're going to talk about other options for like a main course, and we're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff today. But before we even get into how, like, what are some of your go-tos for a main course for a big Christmas meal?
Prime rib. I mean, that's like the marquee everybody wants to see, especially if a chef's cooking. They're hoping that that's what you bring out. And you hit it on the preview too. Leg of lamb is a good kind of showpiece stopper, especially if it's bone in. Ham, and we'll get into ham in a little bit, all the different varieties of ham, but those are kind of cool things. And then I typically will try, if I'm with a good group of people, I'll do one of those Christmas story duck beheadings at the table where I'll cook the duck head with it and just slam down the cleaver right on top of it. And it's kind of a cool showpiece. But, you know, honestly, Christmas, and when we get into New Year's a little bit later, this is your time to kind of break the tradition of of Thanksgiving, where you're kind of set into stuffing and cranberry sauce and certain things. You get to have a little fun with some of these proteins that, and again, I will tell you, Christmas Day is not the day to try some of your first hands at making like beef Wellington and stuff like that, right? But there are some things here that we're going to talk about that are pretty foolproof that I think will be pretty good. So
I do have, now you still have to get your puff pastry, right? Yeah. But I do have the foolproof way to do a welly and not overcook the meat.
Yep.
Sous vide the tenderloin to the perfect temperature, throw it in the fridge, and make it from cold. And when the pastry's done, it's done.
Yep.
And you're out. But I agree with you. If you've never made one, don't do that for Christmas.
Yeah, you know, I think the other thing, too, that people forget about is, and we can get into beef Wellington a little bit if you want, but I think you're right on. You're going to hear a lot of sous vide techniques this segment, because I really think this is not only it's a great way to cook, but it's also a time saver for you. It's Christmas Day. I mean, and one of the things when I was doing my notes on this show, it's unlike Thanksgiving. Christmas Day, the days leading up to it, you are so busy with kids and presents and wrapping and doing all these things to keep the family festive and going to trips. You don't really have a lot of time to start pre-making stuff. And so for me, a sous vide does take a lot of this day of stuff and lets you spend some more time with the kids or the family where they may be able to help in the kitchen. But some of the heavy hitting things, you're letting the sous vide kind of ease you into it without screwing it up.
Yeah, I would agree, because I mean, if you look at something, we'll go ahead into like a prime rib. I don't really want to do that with a sous vide, but I will, and I have, and it's come out pretty damn good. But I'm a big believer in stuff like that. What's really beautiful about it is you can throw that thing in there, even though you say you don't have time. Well, you can if you don't have to do anything.
Right.
So you can throw that thing in a sous vide circulator. Let's say the day before, you can pick your exact perfect cook temperature. You can run it for 8 hours. It doesn't care. It's a big hunk of meat, so it can handle that without breaking down the texture. You take it out in the evening and whip it in the refrigerator, and then you cook it just like you normally would in your oven. You get your beautiful bark, your herb crust, whatever you're going to do with it. And again, all you have to do then is cook it until it's, you know, if you temp it with a thermometer, make sure it's like 120-ish, so it's not cold when you're serving it. And when it looks right and it's warm in the middle, it's not over, it's done. There's none of this, like, I'm really not sure type of situation. And then I don't know what you do with the people that want to ruin prime rib. Like, I want to not invite them, but I have a half of my family wouldn't come then.
I got a solution for it later. There's something I created in the past that will help people kind of get – I don't want to make this show product placement, but yeah.
No, go ahead, man. People like products.
I do want to make sure that if you have not gotten those temperature probes that Jack has on T-Spaz, you are going to make your life much harder during this Christmas season, especially some of your rib, you know, your roast and your bone-in lambs. Having those probes, it's almost foolproof, and it's just you can't. One, you can't rely on some of these old school chef things that you plug in there. They're just uncalibrated and they suck. Two, if you're trying to do it just by time and temp, you're going to miss it, and it's just not going to work. Save yourself the trouble. And the other product placement I am going to do, she did not ask me, but it's on my notes, because it's always something that people forget about, is on Christmas Day, the best way to start is with a good cup of coffee. And I'm not trying to product placement, but I'm telling you, waking up to a coffee, the house full of people, and you have great coffee that's being brewed and it smells throughout the house. One, it tells people to get the hell up. But two, it's just a great way to start. And I highly, if you haven't got Nicole Sauce's Hollow Roast Coffee, I'm a huge fan. Like I went up to see her roast a few months ago. I'm drinking the Monsoon Coffee. But man, like it's honestly like every single day it's in my cup. And I guarantee, and she's got a big special going on right now too. Again, I didn't mean to product placement for her, but I love her to death.
Until if you're watching this live or you're listening to it today, it was published. I think you've got till tomorrow to get it before Christmas.
Yeah,
I think I remember an email coming out from her that said something about that date. And for some reason, the 18th is in my head. I don't know if I'm right though.
I know she's busy though. She's
super busy. Slammed, and that's a good thing to be, you know. I did pick up a coffee hack last week, and I feel stupid for not doing it myself, because I use this in so many other things. My buddy David, you know David, he's a foodie like me, and we went down surf fishing down in Freeport, and we were all stupid and nobody brought coffee because it's an Airbnb and you think it'll be good coffee there. There wasn't, so we were drinking hazelnut Folgers Free Ground. And he said, I can make it taste a little better. I'm like, with what, bourbon? He goes, no. And he carries around one of the little micro graters with a nutmeg. And Ken's going to get his.
Yep.
I actually usually have
one. It's in my pocket all the time.
And if you float a little nutmeg on coffee, and what, like, it doesn't add the flavor like I think it is like an eggnog or some other things you can put it on. What it does, though, is that steam, when you first take that first sip, that aroma from that eggnog just hits you, or not eggnog, nutmeg just hits you, And I gotta say, I think that that might be like something you could drop on your guests, like you're saying, if they're staying for Christmas and you're making that coffee in the morning, it's just microplane a little nutmeg on the top. Don't even tell them you did it, right?
No.
A lot of us have these relations that, like, the best thing you can do for them is trick them into trying things. Because if you tell them, they're like a 38-year-old person turns into a little child. They're like, well, I'll try it, and then they're like. And you're like, you're not going to like anything you try that way. You're not going to like, man.
No, you have to want it. So no, but I think that is a good way to start the morning, to start the whole day. Cause it is you have to think of Christmas Day as like a marathon. It is a long day, but hopefully it's a day filled with joy and with your family, not stressing over all the stuff you got to do in the kitchen and dishes and things like that. So coffee definitely gets the day going well. So
let's go back to our prime rib. How do we make prime rib and have it kick ass, man?
So, you know, when you start with prime rib, obviously I suggest you try to go get it from a reputable place. Obviously, like, Costco is great, but if you do have a butcher, obviously I am butchering now, so I got to represent, you know, butchers. And there's a good place, Cup Processing, down here in New Braunfels. You can get some really good whole loins for – you know, they're gonna cost you a little bit of money, right? And so right now with beef the way it is right now, consider this a luxury item. I think right now we were doing about $18 a pound, and they're averaging about 25 to 30 pounds. And so, you know, you're looking at a $200 to $300 price tag. Now you can get a lot of meat out of that. And so, you know, if you split that up and you've got 12, 15 people and you average that price out, it's actually not bad. But if you're footing the bill up front, that is the number one thing you got to think about. Now, when people, a little misnomer, when people say prime rib, there are grades of meat, select, you know, choice, select, and prime. Prime rib does not mean the grade of the beef. It's the name of the primal cut. So technically you could get a choice or a select graded loin. And I'll be honest with you, most of the prime ribs you've had out there are that grade. USDA, you know, the prime designation is probably accounts for about 2 to 3% of all the, and you probably wouldn't want to pay that money anyway. You'd probably be looking at about $30 a pound.
Yeah.
For me, it depends on how I'm cooking it. We'll go over both techniques, but for me, I am a sous vide fan when it comes to prime rib. I can set that temperature low and it can go all day. I cryovac it in with some butter and some herbs and some different things in there. And then we'll get into a little bit more. But if I'm going to do it in the oven, it's bone in all the time. And bone in will save, boneless will save you money because of the weight. But bone in will, one, give a presentation like you couldn't believe.
Yeah.
And two, it retains a lot of the heat and moisture. And you'll notice just the cook is a lot better with bone in. So you're kind of splitting the difference, price versus presentation. But if presentation is what you want, the idea is prime rib for me in the oven, bone in. And we can go into that if you want. So
yeah, we will. Say it. I just want to add something. Like, when you buy a whole primal, like, or a subprimal, the whole rib primal, you're looking at a big hunk of meat, like you said, and that jacks price up. Well, what you can do, and you probably should, is don't buy the one that's cut down.
Yeah.
You're going to pay more per pound for it that way. This is not like, if I said to go break down a chuck roll or something like that, there's a skill set to doing that properly.
Mm-hmm.
This is easy. It's you just make slices. So if you got a really big one, and let's say you have like six family members coming, so eight total people, you don't need that much meat. So what you do is you size it to the size of the rib roast you want or the prime rib you want, and the rest of it, you bust those down into ribeye steaks and throw them in the freezer. And now you're paying less for your steaks than for your prime rib. I just wanted to add that. And also, I had not tried this, but this guy I follow that talks about meat cutting a lot named Meat Dad, I've seen him do several times a rib roast where he actually takes the bone off, flips it over, and ties it, and puts the rib cap or the rib over the cap.
It's badass. Yeah.
To keep the – and I didn't know if that worked or not, but he's a pretty switched-on dude, so –
yeah, I haven't tried it, but I've watched it a couple times, and I mean, that's brilliant to do that, because it's almost – the bones are almost perfectly matched for the meat to just kind of go into it.
Yeah.
I agree. Buying a larger primal section and cutting it is probably going to be a lot – it is going to be a lot cheaper, no doubt. And you almost have a – without the bones, excuse me, you know, there's no kind of line. You can, it's pretty easy. But even with the bones there, it's almost foolproof. It just go between the bones, right? Yeah. Yeah. Now, the other thing you can do too, if you go to a good butcher, is you can say, hey, I don't want a whole one. I want a half one, or I want to get two bone sections, right? Because you're getting that prime rib is coming from the 6th and 12th bone. So you can go in two bone sections and get them to maybe only you need two cuts, right? So you got two big, nice, you know, at that point it could range anywhere from 64 to 72 ounces for that big chunk.
Yeah.
And then that makes it much easier if you even wanted to do it in a sous vide for sure. Presentation lacks, but the price and value, you're still getting quality like meat without the show stopping presentation. So
cool.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite go-to, like, walk us through doing a prime rib.
Yeah, so it starts a couple of days beforehand. You know, if you can dry age your meat, I like doing that. But, you know, a lot of people don't have time or space in the fridge for that. But for me, for a must, I'll grab it, whether I'm doing a whole loin or I'm doing sections. My number one thing is make sure it's nice and dry. And then I pack it with a little bit of a dry rub. Again, it's going to be like a dry brine, basically. And I kind of want to put mostly salt, a little bit of pepper on there, but just kind of rub it all over the damn place, all the edges and things. And then I throw that sucker uncovered in the fridge if I have the room for it. It's worth it if you can. Mm-hmm. If not, it is what it is. But again, I'm looking for dryness on that outside texture. I don't want – it's such a large chunk of meat that when you put it in the oven, if it's wet, it has the potential to steam. That causes a lot of issues with cook, and it gives you – eventually it'll cause you to have that nasty gray ring that's around your prime rib that people kind of look for as like the if you know what you're doing kind of thing. So first couple of days out, I'll throw it in there, throw some salt on it. I just leave it be, and I just kind of let it be. And then when it's done, or when I'm ready, I'll wash it off. And I know that kind of like, you know, kind of think, oh, well, washing it off, you're adding water to it. You can let that sucker out of the fridge for a couple of hours. And let that come to room temperature and just keep patting dry all that liquid that's on top. You'll be fine. At that point, if I'm doing oven, I'm setting my oven as low as my oven as possible. I know a lot of people like to do it 350 and then 325. I'll typically do mine for about 250 or 275. And my goal is really about 15 to 20 minutes per pound, at that temperature. And so again, Don't guesswork my time here. Get a probe, put that sucker in there. Make sure it's not near the bone if you're doing bone in, and you're waiting for a temperature. Usually I'll take it to about 120 at that point. But basically I leave it uncovered and I just put it in the oven. I don't touch the damn oven. I leave that sucker closed. If you've got the thermometer, you shouldn't have to open the damn oven. Again, Aunt Kathy's popping up again. Hey, tell Aunt Kathy, leave your hands off the damn oven, you know, and utilize air fryers and other things if you're making other stuff, but that needs to be left alone. And what happens is the seasoning. I like to do a real hard pack of like salt and pepper and maybe some garlic. I don't typically go overboard with seasoning on my meat. I like the meat to speak for itself. Salt and pepper really does it, and it gets you a really nice good bark on it if you know what you're doing. I don't. Sometimes I'll do a wet pack on it where I'll rub like a Dijon mustard or something on it just lightly, and then I'll pack that on top of it. If I really want a really thick crust on it. But for me, I'm looking for low and slow. I want all that fat to just kind of just basically liquefy inside that prime rib. And then I leave it be. When I'm ready and I'm done, I pull it out. Sometimes I don't even cover it. If I know I don't have flies in the house or something, I'll just leave it uncovered and leave it out for a while just to rest at room temperature. And then you're pretty much done. The biggest thing is timing though, trying to time around all the other ingredients and all the other dishes and stuff. So, but we'll get into that a little later. But, prime rib, honestly, it's not hard if you just leave it alone, right? When people pull it out and poke it and prod it and like stick and cut into it, is it done yet? Get a damn thermometer. I mean, we've got a point where technology now is it's almost foolproof.
And I would say, you know, check your oven because you might have an oven that has this integrated into it and you just never used it, so you didn't think about it. My indoor oven actually has a port and a probe. Very and cool. If it's one thing in the oven has it, and the oven will even chirp and alert you when you're approaching your set temperature. So I found a lot of people have technology sitting in their
their hands that they don't realize they have too. But yeah, like the meter block thermometers, man, those things, they're total game changers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Way. Jack, I forgot after I missed this. When it's at a good temperature at like 120,
yeah,
that's when I turn the broiler on and I heat it up and I really get a nice char on top.
Okay, yeah.
And I totally forgot about that. But like at that point, all that fat is kind of just nice and congealed. And you do have a nice like fat layer on top. That's that 500 degrees broiler for like 5-10 minutes. It'll basically bring it up to about 125 ish.
Yeah.
And it'll be nice and crusted. And then that's when you pull it. So I totally forgot.
Your carryover is going to take you to like 130, 132. And that's correct. For a prime rib, that's about perfect.
That's perfect. And, perfect. Perfect. So I totally forgot about that. But yeah.
No, definitely. But I'll tell you guys one thing, because I did this with my smashed potatoes this year. When you turn on that broiler, don't leave.
Yeah.
Turn the oven light on and watch it, because it goes from it can use a little bit more to you nuclearized it like that quick. And I probably lost half my smashed potatoes this year because I got distracted by a house guest. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know I'm – ah, shit. And, like, the whole center where they're right under the main burner were just black. But what is your deal with the people that are like, it should be all red. It's bloody. And I don't like it because it's not blood, folks. It's myoglobin. And that's a technical term for you're being a little bitch. So, like, how do we handle those folks? I mean, Hank Hill would say we ask them politely but firmly to leave. That's not really good for Christmas, though.
So, again, this is most of this stuff is on my web. I'm going to tag my stuff from last year because it's all relevant. What I end up doing for mostly for kids, and because here's the thing: when I'm trying to save money, I don't want to have to buy prime rib to account for the kids that are going to just cut it and then throw it away.
Yeah.
And it's annoying as hell. And, and I don't realistically want to take those scraps off of a kid's plate who might be coughing over it and stuff like that and try to use it as leftovers.
Yeah,
exactly. So what I do is a couple of days before while I'm out doing my Christmas shopping, I'll stop by a local pizza place and I'll ask if I can get some fresh dough. And I'll bring this dough home and I'll put it in the fridge and I'll put a towel over the top of it's wet. And then the day of, typically I am going to be making mashed potatoes and certain things that are kind of staple for the Christmas meal. And those stuff can be done. You can get it done earlier in the day. Basically what I do is I make a Christmas pizza and I basically take like, you know, the base olive. I just take I basically stretch out the, you can get the kids involved too and they can have fun with it and everything. But I'll basically do either, ranch dressing on the base of the pizza, a little olive oil. If you want to do marinara, you can. It's just kind of weird for Christmas time. And then I'll just put a nice smooth layer of mashed potatoes on it. And then I'll probably throw in some like Gruyere or some like mozzarella just lightly on top. And then if we're doing corn or green beans, I'll chop some stuff up, put it on there. And then I'll take like some of the meat, like prime rib or something, if it's ready, or if I'm doing ham and I've already bought the ham or something, I'll just take it on top. And then I just throw it in the oven. And usually I do that right after the prime rib comes out. I just throw the pizza in and basically I will say, if you guys don't want to have actually what the adults are having, eat what the kids are eating. And it's pretty, honestly, the kids love it. If you want to jazz it up too, I'll usually toss some fresh arugula on top.
Yeah.
And then drizzle like a cranberry ranch dressing on top.
Yeah.
And it makes it just a nice, fun, festive thing, but it keeps it really low cost for all of these, like, you might have 10 or 15 kids running around, and if you have to make two pizzas, it sure as hell a lot than having to buy another, you know, half a loin to see it all go in the trash.
Yeah.
And so, look, and for those people who don't eat that stuff, I know things might be scary. Put your adult pants on, or your underwear on, and try to eat some adult food. Just live a little bit. But listen, the other thing too I've done too, and it's kind of a funny thing, just because people who know me, I'm a little bit of an ass. I will take a very thin piece of prime rib that someone's complained about, and I'll literally right during dinner, I'll go and throw it in the oven and throw it in the microwave.
See, I almost do that. I'm a little nicer than you though. I just have carbon steel skillets, and I'll if there's more than one person going to bitch about it, I'll just have two skillets warmed up, and I'll cut them a thin piece, and I'll just like 10 seconds on each side and the color's gone. another hack, I just never end up with enough jus to do this, but this is actually very common in restaurants and all, at least so people tell me. The jus, if you take it and soak it in the jus, it basically stains it. So they're eating it rare, but they don't know it. They're like, this is amazing. Like, funny you should say that. Like, you know, there's ways. But the microwave thing's also another thing I've heard from servers. When they get, like, the Karen in a steakhouse, mm-hmm. like, well, I want it well done, but I don't want it dry. So that's what they'll do. They'll give it, like, you know, 20 seconds in the microwave. They'll cook it medium, and then they'll give it 20 seconds in the microwave.
Yep.
And that's the way to do it. And you can do it with sous vide, but I am not freaking well dunning a prime rib whole, like the whole thing. Like,
no.
I will cook your little piece for you, but that's about – and that's more what I've done. The way you described it, though, was, like, straight oven.
Yeah.
How does sous vide fit in this if you're going to do that?
So sous vide, you start with the same way. I take it and I salt it down. I make sure it gets nice and dry. And then you've got so much fat in those ribeye pieces. What I'd like to do is that's when I do cut those into two double high loin pieces, and I cryovac it. But then in that technique, I add like rosemary and different herbs in there, and I'll even put a little bit of tallow or butter in there. Just for a little extra bit of like just savoriness in there. And then I throw it in there. And for me, this is the best way because Jack is right. I can set that for like 120 and it's going to stay at 120 for hours. I don't have to worry about it. There's so much fat in there. It's just going to get beautiful in there. And so I can kind of time my meal as I go throughout the day. What happens is though, as soon as I'm ready for it, again, we get the ice bath involved. I pull it, I ice bath it because I want that to stop immediately.
Yeah.
I pull it from the bags and then I will pat it dry. I'm not worried about flavor because at that point, all that flavor has permeated. Everything's delicious. I pat it dry and I leave it out and it's going to look like a gray, ugly mess. And do not worry. for me though, at this point, this is when I will pan sear or go on the Blackstone and I'll pan sear it. Now, again, you're looking more like a ribeye steak in this situation, a double one. But for me, that's where I get the crust, but I also get the control. Like temperature is a lot easier for me. Like I'll put it this way. If I'm not looking for presentation, I'm looking for form over function, right? Function over form. I want this to be easy for me to replicate, people to enjoy it done perfectly, but done my way. And I've never done a whole one, like a whole loin. I have a small Cambro back there with my sous vide. But I would be interested to see how you could do one whole one, just leaving in there all freaking day.
Oh, you can do it.
Yeah. I would be interesting to do. So
I've never done a whole, rib primal, but I've done brisket.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about the same amount. Well, it's actually a little more. We've done brisket and we've actually with the brisket, I've never done this with a prime rib and I should. But I'm with you. I'm not trying something new on that day until you've proofed it out. But I've done brisket where I'll throw it on the smoker and I'll get a bark on it. And it's 125 degrees in the center. I mean, it's not even started to cook. It's just barked up a bit. Cool that down and go with the crust first and then sous vide it. And then you can sous vide a brisket at like 135 degrees. And you can leave that in there for like 24 hours. And now you're serving somebody, you know, a medium to medium rare brisket that's tender as fuck. And that's kind of a cool hack, too. I haven't done that in about 2 years. I need to do that again.
I love your comment, spoiled by high-end equipment. I know you're joking about it, but listen, if you guys want to do traditional ways, it's all good. Like that, I've been training that for years, but
that's what it was in response to.
Oh, okay. It's trial vacuum. Oh, heard. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was in response to. It's just, you have better sealers than we do, right?
Look, guys, when the biggest tip, if you want to take away, and this goes for just in general steaks in general, but the biggest tip I can give you is get that, the surface layer of that meat as dry as possible.
Yeah.
Your Maillard process starts at about 321 Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So anything up to that point, it's steaming.
Yeah.
And that's how you get really tough pieces of meat. So if you can just eliminate all that moisture as best as possible, and then try to get most of the meats that you're going to be searing off or getting that nice real crisp. You need to get it as close to room temperature as possible. Don't make that meat have to come up to temperature from the inside from 32 degrees, from 34 degrees, right? Yeah. So that is honestly, people think rib roast are so hard to do. And reality is the less you screw with it, the better. And get those damn thermometers. Use technology. It's a good thing. So, hell, if I could get a trained AI to do this for me. As a matter of fact, this whole segment, I'm actually an AI voice and picture right now. So.
I don't think you're that good yet with it. What about, let's move on to some other like main courses. Yeah. Nicole said a goose. You've done a duck with the head on, like a Chinese duck. I mean, one's smaller than the other, but it's a very similar process cooking and preparing the two.
Yeah, you know, your damn goose, every time I come to your house, it's been staring me in the face. I want to cook that stuff so bad. So listen, guys, duck, and this is another thing. I wish more people would eat more duck. Most people enjoy, we're not going to talk about turkey, but most people enjoy dark meat. And duck is essentially all dark meat. It's wonderful, right? And some people don't like the flavor, and it is what it is. But the things that you have to remember about duck and goose is fat. They have fat caps, and they're just loaded with an immense amount of fat all around it. When I'm doing duck again, let's talk about the process. Obviously you're pulling, if you're getting frozen, you should be pulling sometime, you know, it depends on, usually people don't. Yeah, you shouldn't, not as big as a 25-pound turkey, but it should be soon, right? Because as it's defrosting, it's dropping a bunch of moisture. You want to get all that moisture out days before, and then you're again, I have to admit, Jack, I did the dry rub this year, and I was really happy with it. And so I'm suggesting it again, like add your dry rub on it, get that brine going. Get that moisture, that osmosis out of the skin. And then when you're ready, wash it off and dry it down and let it come to temp. And then I'm putting it in the oven. And again, before I put it in, I am scoring those fat. You have fat all along it. Anywhere there's a big fat cap, I score cross grain on it everywhere, just crisscross, crisscross. Now, a lot of people just think it's for pitch, like for color and for different things. I call it like it gives it ways for that fat to leave the skin, right? So if you leave channels of it, just you'll see the fat just kind of pouring off and dredging into the bottom, right? For these though, I like to use the V-racks in the oven, where it's the V-rack that sits like this and you put the bird in and it doesn't sit in its own juices. For me, that's really important when you're working with duck or goose. There are times too, I do not recommend this. I highly recommend, do not recommend this, but I've done it before, is I have a pretty big oven. I will actually take a duck and I'll set it on my top rack. There's plenty of space up top. I'll set it on my top rack. No pan, just directly on the grate. And then I'll take my pan with the goose underneath it, so that as the duck cooks, it drips down onto the goose. And it is fantastic. Now, you have a lot of highly volatile fat in that oven. So if you do not have a large oven, do not do this. If you have any indirect heat that is, I recommend do not do this. It's something stupid a chef does.
Okay.
But it was super fun. If you have a grill out back though, and you have a double one and there's enough space, super cool way to get the dredgings from the duck into the fat, into the goose. And then at the bottom, you put all your like red potatoes and different like root vegetables underneath there. And then you've got like a duck goose, like melange of just like flavor down there. It's so good. Right.
Yeah.
Another tip I do for the duck, and I've done it once and it actually worked out well, is sometimes the bottom section of the duck, you want it to cook a little faster than the top section, right? Because you, again, just like with turkey, you're looking at things on a bird that cooks at different rates. So instead of quartering it or doing things like that, I'll actually braise the bottom of the duck in a pan. I'll put a little like wine or something and a little bit of a stock, and I'll set the duck in there where it's probably like that high onto the bottom of the duck. And I'll throw it on top of my oven or on the grill outside, and I'll just come to a slow simmer. And what I'm doing is I'm basically just cooking that bottom section of the duck a little more, so that when I throw it into my indirect heat or my roast, it basically will just finish cooking quicker, and then the top section finishes off. And again, using those thermometers and just knowing what temperature you want to pull at. The best thing, though, is with the duck and the goose, at the end, again, especially in the oven, I will fire it off at 500 degrees. But when you do this, you need to put that rack on the bottom rack of your oven. If you do not, your house will catch fire.
Yeah.
There is so much fat in there that if your broilers are on top or so close, I know it may be quicker, but if one of those catches a flame, that whole sucker's going up.
Yeah, and all that grease that's down in the pan, that's going to go, and then you've got like the vortex of doom going. You don't want that. One thing I did a duck with the turkey for Thanksgiving this year, and I didn't do the drip on top of the other thing. But the dry brining I did was actually quite a bit different. Like the turkey was obviously mostly salt, a little bit of sugar, pepper, but then like with some sage and some thyme and oregano and rosemary in it. The duck, I added more oriental Mideastern herbs and seasonings, like a little bit of green cardamom, some true cinnamon, and some allspice and a little bit of clove.
Yeah.
Into that brine, and that gave it more of this perfumed, more kind of Asian thing going on to it. And it wasn't in your face, but it was there, and it was it went real well with duck. Because somebody was mentioned earlier, like if you make duck breast by itself and you cook it medium, it's freaking beautiful. Yeah, but that's not going to work when we're making a whole bird. We're in a different world there.
No, in fact, you know, you're really looking for medium rare when it comes to duck and goose. I know that people, again, you're going to get Aunt Kathy complaining because it's still pink inside.
Yeah.
But you know, especially for someone like you who raises ducks and goose on property, you know where they've been. You know what they're, they're not in some horrible, especially with some of you homesteaders, you know what's going on with your birds well before you slaughter them. And so medium rare to me, you know, and that's going to be right around for me around 120, 125 ish. I mean, give or take, maybe a little more for some people. I just like mine real pink. I like mine to be, and again, if you, a little segue, non sequitur, if you have, get your hands on the Sandhill Crane. I know Jack and I had some Sandhill Crane. That might even do a whole segment on that coming up, because that was a fascinating. It's basically a bird here in Texas that when you cook the breast, it tastes just like ribeye. It looks like beef. And I'm also with you too, Jack. I think
I started eyeballing that federally protected blue heron that keeps hanging out of my fish ponds and going,
you look damn tasty.
I wonder if it's the same. I can't see it being that much different, but I also don't want to go to federal prison. No, so, but yeah,
I do agree with you though. Sometimes the old, salt, pepper, garlic, sage, thyme, rosemary gets old after Thanksgiving. And so, what I would tell you, look, if you're not a chef or you don't feel comfortable using individual spices, go to your grocery store and just get a spice rub and something that you might want to try. I've taken curry and I've rubbed curry on duck as well. And it's like I said, most people, if you didn't know, you would probably go, oh, that's tasty. But if you told them, oh, I don't like curry, I don't like, why are you doing an Indian dish? You're like, dude, it's just, you know, different flavors. So don't be afraid to, that is kind of where I would say, don't be afraid to experiment, try something new during the holidays, because happy accidents are wonderful things to happen. And mostly seasoning, unless you just go completely overboard, you really can't go too bad on seasoning. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you don't, and then, you know, you can always add more seasoning. So if you feel that like you're not sure about something, go easy and see if you like the characteristic of it. And then whenever I make a rub, I always save some extra anyway, because it's hard to make the exact amount you need. So I just make way too much. And then I put it in a jar with a label on what it was. And what I need to do better about it when I whip stuff up like that off the cuff is like actually note what I did. Because there's times where I'll make one, I'm like, that was perfect, and I can never make it again exactly the same way.
This goes back to that segment we did damn near a year ago about one of the best things you can do for not only the legacy of your family, and these are the times, these holidays are the times where you're talking about legacy things that you're cooking for your family, writing down these recipes so that your kids can do them long after you're gone. Hugely important. I couldn't stress that more.
Somebody's asking if we save fat.
Hell yeah.
From a duck. I always save duck fat. I always save goose fat. I've also done, like, I have a rotisserie for my Weber kettle, and I've done ducks on that rotisserie with, I have these fire boxes. So you've got your fire off to both sides of the bottom of the kettle, and a half sheet throwaway aluminum pan will fit perfectly in that space between those. And I'll par cook, because they don't get as much heat down there, I'll par cook potatoes and maybe some other root vegetable, put them down in that pan, and then rotisserie that duck like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And then all that duck fat and all that grease goes down in there. And when you pull the rotisserie, then you just throw the top on the grill and move that over on top of one of the fireboxes.
That's brilliant.
And get a little bit of like sizzle to it to finish it off. And it's like people go, wow, that's amazing. It's, there's nothing to it. It's just a matter of do you have the equipment? It's really super easy. And that's, I picked that up just watching, I think it was Anthony Bourdain or one of those other guys. Just like in, it's like a thing the French do. They cook a duck and they put potatoes underneath it. Like, and yeah. That's something I came up with.
No. Hey, real quick, too, Jack, whenever you got those, that extra spice rub that you've created, obviously, you know, writing down what it is, what I like to do with those two is I'll take some fresh parsley and then I'll take all that spice rub and I'll make a compound butter with it.
Ooh.
I'll just leave the butter that's already, should already be on your counter, you know, soft.
Yeah.
Put it, just get a whisk and just mix that together. And then you can add it to whatever you want. You can add it to your mashed potatoes. You can add whatever you want well after, you know, Christmas. You can get a piece of, I'm probably going to stop eating carbs after the holidays, but
yeah,
you know, a nice piece of bread, sourdough with a, you know, smear of that compound butter. It's delicious. So
I just picked up another hack on butter too. Like if you need butter to be soft, but you, if you try to melt it, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't take it out to let it soften. Grate it.
I saw that the other day. That
was and I tried it. It works. Like it immediately, like I think it's because the surface area gets exposed to the room temperature so fast. And all of a sudden you can mix it. You can do everything you would do with a softened butter with it. And that's kind of cool.
There's a low-tech hack right there.
What's that?
That's a low-tech hack right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just your standard cheese grater and you're there, man. Now don't try it with half soft butter. That's when you have like right out of the refrigerator, hard butter. And like right now, the damn, we don't turn the heat on unless we actually get cold. So the damn butter's hard on the counter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So you got any more on like main courses before we move into some peripheral stuff?
Yeah. We have to talk about ham. I think ham is probably one of the most sought after things. And like, and there's, I'll be honest with you, there's so many variables in ham that it can get confusing when you're at the grocery store. I do have a post on drinkeatlearn.com. It talks about all the different variables of ham. You know, I don't have any problem, and I'm going to say this, and some people are going to cringe. I don't care. Go to Honey Baked. Go to your places that buy them. I mean, they do it well. It saves you time. It's nowhere to save yourself some headache. If you do want to do some ham stuff, you know, there's all these different types of ham when you go to the store and you're kind of like, what the hell is all this? So you've got like spiral cut, and this is pretty much the ones that people know of, and it's just how they cut it, and it's bone in. Some of them, most of them are already cooked. You can find some that are par cooked too, but mostly they're already all cooked. This is the typical honey baked ham, crowd pleaser. Everyone goes for it. You do have bone-in, non-spiral, and these are all names that you will see in a grocery store that can be very confusing. And so, if it says bone-in ham, this is a traditional ham. It has been cured. It has, you know, some seasoning in it too. You're going to have to cook this, and reach out to me, and we'll tell you how to cook that appropriately. But it's pretty easy. Then you have boneless ham. Boneless ham is kind of like, for me, like the Dr. Frankenstein style of ham, where like, it may look like a big chunk of ham and it's really cool, but what they did was they removed the bone and then they kind of reform it into like a loaf shape for you, so it doesn't look unappealing and nasty. But it understand what you're kind of getting there is kind of a congealed form of ham pieces. Now, granted, there's some great ones out there, but just understand like usually what you're thinking about boneless hams are for sandwiches and stuff. And so, and then you've got canned ham. I always remember those ones where my grandma would make me peel the with the key, the top off of those, right? You remember those? Those are cool. You know, stick your little cloves and pineapple on top and put it in the oven for a little bit. And then you've got fresh ham. Fresh ham is basically raw, uncured. Basically, you're looking is basically that is like a pork roast, and you treat it like a pork roast. And then the labels are also fully cooked, partially cooked, fresh. And then water content is another thing you'll see. And then specialty hams. Then you start getting into like you're like aged, cured, air dried, salt cured for months at a time. And these are really cool. Don't get me wrong. You're going to pay. But you're talking about the ones where you're sitting down and you're slicing very thinly and like it's more of like a charcuterie style where you put it on your tongue and let the fat dissolve. And don't be wrong, that if you someone had that at Christmas, I would die. That would be amazing, right? But that's when you start getting into like a Berko, prosciutto, and then again,
Serrano, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so expect to pay good money. You'll see them sometimes at Costco and they're really good deals on at Costco and stuff. Get them. I mean, you're going to love them. They're delicious. But there's he was showing me the website. I have a glaze recipe. I have all different styles, different stuff on there that you guys can go through. These are ones that I use on a regular basis. But don't let hams complicate your life. They can be difficult to cook if you don't know what you're doing right. That's why I say honey baked ham or going to your grocery store and getting one that's already cooked. It's okay. It really is okay. But I think that's also a great way for Aunt Kathy, who may not like a raw prime rib, to shut her mouth and have something to put in it, right? Where she can be happy because you've got a really nice spiral cut ham, and it looks, and that is also a gorgeous centerpiece for a table. You know, so hams, I don't want to fool people. They I don't know why they needlessly make it complicated with all the labeling and it may be USDA bullshit, but it's a cool thing if you like ham. So, and I like ham leftovers. So,
yeah, I'd say if you're gonna glaze a ham, make a little extra glaze, and then people can put a little bit on because you know it only goes on the outside. That's what's nice about the spiral slices. Glaze can kind of get down in there, and then you end up with that. You know, the bottom piece that they can't actually spiral slice. And that's always great to throw in a pot and do like a ham and bean soup or something after Christmas.
Yep. One other thing too, Jack, before we go on, I wanted to also, just because I'm butchering so much right now and I'm going through so many of it every day, this is when you guys need to start using your venison backstraps. This is a really cool piece to have on the table. It really is a earthy, like very like homesteady thing to have. And I know I do a lot of cuts where I'm cutting steaks in the venison backstrap, but you can leave that whole backstrap whole, hit it really fast, just real quick on the top, give a nice like sauce on top, and it's probably something that most people, especially if Aunt Kathy lives in the city, and coming out to see you out in your homestead, she's probably never had venison before.
Yeah.
Now I would never overcook that backstrap. So if she doesn't like it, she can go eat out with the dogs.
Yeah, she can go eat the dog's food.
Correct.
Right. But, I've always found those to be delicious. I'd have to really love a family member to do this, but cooking whole venison tenderloin that same way is I actually like it's weird to me. Like filet mignon, which is beef tenderloin, I'm not gonna turn it down or nothing. But I don't get that excited. I'd rather eat a ribeye than a filet from a cow. Venison's different. The tenderloins off a white-tailed deer are, and maybe it's just because it's so easy to cook them properly whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do like a whole tenderloin roast, you got to kind of take the ends off it. And then the way I've done it is like super high temperature oven, 120 in the center and yank it.
String it up and tie it.
Where a venison tenderloin, you can just take a flat top and just give it a couple quick rolls, pull it, and it's gorgeous. It's
You're giving me an idea to doing either a backstrap or tenderloin deer Wellington.
Ooh,
that would be interesting.
I'd be freaking good. That would be freaking good. But I'm probably going to do this year as like the extra thing. I have a whole rib rack from a lamb that I think I'm going to do that. And that'll be the exotic thing for my peeps, you know, like, oh, lamb. Yes, a lamb. It's a baby sheep. That just makes it worse. Like I said, it's a lot of times It's just better if people don't know what they're eating.
Yep.
And then they're like, then they know they like it, you know.
I know we want to move on. One last thing on lamb. Just make sure when you're buying the lamb, you know what age you're buying. Don't buy mutton. Older.
Oh, mine was murdered at John Willis's place.
Even better. Even better.
Yeah. No, you're right, though. Like, is it really a lamb? There's like an age thing.
Yeah.
And there's like lamb, and then there's a mutton, which is like a 2-year-old sheep. And then there's, I don't know what they call it. There's something in the middle where it's not legally lamb, but I think that one ended up being like 14 months old, and we were worried a little bit, and it was freaking fantastic. Yeah. You missed that. We did that for the pregame for the workshop. Oh, we did a back leg of it. Oh. And it, when I got it from him, I didn't know it was that young. I thought it was a sheep. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't that excited about it. It was one of the butcher guys did a workshop at one of the events there. And I took half of the animal home. It was all I could fit in my plug-in freezer box. Mm-hmm. And I wish I'd have took the whole thing now. If I would have known it was that young, I think I would have went to the store and bought another cooler. Because it was that damn good, you know. But yeah, let's kind of move on to some other stuff. I mean, you're the chef, so I'll let you kind of go next.
But let's talk sides really quick. We can get to appetizers a little bit later, but let's do sides. You're heavy. You've got some big proteins on there. So number one, you're probably mashed potatoed out by now with Thanksgiving. Typically, I will make a small batch of mashed potatoes just for the kids. It's not hard to do since you're already going to having potatoes. What I like to do during Christmas is potato gratin. And this is something that I can get some of my annoying nieces and nephews to help out with. Basically, I'll have all these potatoes cut into like thin slices, and then I'll tell them, "Hey, I want you to layer these in the pan or put them upright," and I'll show how to do it. And then I add, some onions, some sautéed onions and different things in there, add the cream. I also use a little yolk in there as well, either egg yolk or duck yolk for a little richness, and then tons of cheese. And then we layer cheese on top, and I throw it in the oven, and that's something I can usually throw in my air fryer that will toast up, will heat up nicely, because I can usually cook those potatoes early. And so it's usually a dish that will take 20 to 30 minutes that I don't have to worry about the potatoes actually cooking. I'll just boil those until they're about three. Basically, what I do is I'll take my potatoes and I boil them down until they're about 3/4 cooked. Meaning when I put my fork into it, it's basically a little difficult but not hard to put in. Then I pull them and then I let them cool and then I cut them into thin slices. Then after that, I can just – and usually I do that either a couple of days before, 2 or 3 days before. And then I let my little nieces and nephews layer that into the dish. And that's usually a very hearty potato dish that's loaded with cheese. You get that really good cheese crunch, on top that just everybody loves. And it's great. And usually at the end, I'll dab a little bit of sour cream or creme fraiche on top with some parsley to make it look real fancy. So that's usually my potato. I know we did the dauphinois and the mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving, but I don't know. People can get. I'd like to just do something different for potatoes. Mm. Your smashed potatoes were phenomenal, by the way.
That's phenomenal. I feel sad that I burned so many of them.
Yeah, I probably would have eaten them. So
well, we cut the top off in the, but they're pretty thin by the time you mash them down. One of my sides I like to do, and it sounds boring until you think about the second part of it, is just green beans. But I like to use fresh green beans, trim up the ends, and cut them in about, so you don't have to cut them. So they're about a size to eat.
Yep.
And I just put them in a baking dish. But before it goes in the oven, I'll take thick rashers of bacon and I'll cook the bacon until it's like 20 to 30% cooked. Because if you don't do that, it doesn't get cooked enough.
Yep.
And it's too chewy. It doesn't get any crisp to it. And then you take it out, let it cool down, and slice it in thin ribbons and throw that on top of your green beans. Mm. And that's literally it.
Yep.
You don't need any salt. You don't need any pepper because all the salt in that bacon grease is going to – and then the beans bake, and they get – you want them that bright green when they're still a little al dente. Mm-hmm. And that bacon grease, and that's – you just mix that up with them. And all of a sudden people are like, I don't really like green beans. We'll try one. And they're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like green bean candy with bacon on it. Now, who the hell wouldn't want that?
Yeah, it's funny you said that. That's literally my next one. Is I always look for something that's a familiar vegetable that like speaks to the holidays, and that is always green beans.
Okay.
And you're hitting on the head. I don't do that bacon thing, but that sounds amazing. But for me, having just some buttered green beans, it's something that's simple that people love, and it just reminds them of the holidays. I don't do the green bean casserole thing. I'm anti that weird conglomeration. But I also do like to eat kind of simply on Christmas, right? I let the protein speak loudly, and then the one thing I do that I do love, and you can do two variables of it. I always make cream spinach. For me, it's super easy. I can put it on a pot, heavy cream. I reduce it down a little bit, and I just throw my spinach in with a crap ton of cheese. I mean, like a 5 or 6 handfuls of just mozzarella, just loaded in there. Add a little bit of stock from whatever I'm cooking, just from flavor. And just let that just kind of simmer down until it's just a beautiful cream. You don't like spinach. You should have a can. If you don't already, just have a can of corn kernels, strain them out and dump a couple of cans in there. Now you got cream corn. Now, a lot of people don't like that. For me, that speaks Christmas a lot. When I was growing up, my dad always had cream spinach. And so I kind of make that, but it's a really, really easy dish to make. And it's so like, and later on, we're going to talk briefly about things that you can take to a dinner that's easy. Cream corn and cream spinach are super easy to make. Mm. And you can transfer it pretty easily into a Tupperware and then heat it up there. And it is something that you can make in less than 15 minutes, and it travels really well. And you can make it a few days in advance.
But let's talk bread a little bit here. We talked about how even if you're buying the pop in the oven rolls, it's better for Thanksgiving. It's better to make it than Christmas to me. Like, I'm going to really indulge on carbs on Christmas, probably more than I do on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is a time for a trip to like the real bakery.
Absolutely.
Where they make the real bread and get it as close as you can, and then just warm it in the oven because it's already cooked. But like a really good, like stone ground, half rye, half wheat sourdough or something like that. Like, that's the kind of thing I want to have for a bread. And there is something, if you're doing a prime rib and you get that, what jus you do get, and you get that juice that comes out of it, and that bread with butter, especially like you said, a compound butter, and then you can soak up a little bit of that meat juice with it. That's hard to say it's not wonderful, because it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, on Christmas, I actually don't have gravy. I do what you do. I make au jus.
Yeah.
And typically what I'll do is, and you're absolutely right, there's a couple of bakers I have in town, and I see in the stream that some of you guys are already starting your sourdough, and that's about the time to start doing that right now. This is the perfect time for sourdough. And I love rye. I love different variables of different styles of like peasant style bread. And so I'll go to my local baker and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Be honest with you, they'll be happy to make something for you. They're tired of making all the rolls and the same shit. And if you want, you might pay a little more for it. But again, just like I tell you with the butchery stuff, and support your local artisans, man. They bring such added culture. And like right here in New Braunfels, we're German town. And so you get some amazing German bread and German everything here. But if you don't ask for it and don't pay that little bit of extra money, that stuff goes away. And then you're stuck with the HEB Ralph's version of whatever the hell it is, you know? So now if you can only afford that, I'm not faulting that. But I agree, bread, if you're going to eat it, sourdough's great, man. And then basically what I'm doing, like you, I'm dipping that in the au jus, putting that little butter on top. My wife says that bread is my excuse to eat so much butter.
Yeah.
I know. So take that's what you're absolutely right, Jack. Do the bread. If you do want to do the rolls, again, I recommend things like challah bread or different things that are just different. I don't get like sliced bread from Mrs. Bear's or anything like that. That's not the way to do this time of year. So
no.
Yeah.
Not at all. It's not good. No, like just bread is a conveyance system for butter.
Yep.
Sushi is a conveyance system for soy sauce and wasabi.
Absolutely.
Right? That's what it's for. Yeah. And I love sushi, but I'm just, there is something to at least making a joke about it, because it is part of what makes it wonderful. You got anything else on size before we kind of move from there?
Yeah, things I do, and you can always check out the recipes later on, but like I do like a braised red cabbage. I think that's kind of fun, different. Some people don't really see that too often. Usually
that's
during
throwback, man. That's a World War II era meal.
Yeah, I honestly, my grandma taught me, and it was kind of one of those things I do just to remember her a little bit. And usually, I'm the only one that eats it. But again, you're looking at think of like what cranberry sauce does for Thanksgiving. Braised red cabbage is a little bit of acidic, and so it does cut down a little on the heavy umami stuff that you got. Again, I will always do roasted Brussels sprouts in the air fryer. This is when I do the balsamic bacon thing, and just you can look it up online. But that the convection of that air dries out the edges of that Brussels sprouts, and it does not allow it to kind of most people they don't like Brussels sprouts is because they steam, and they're not.
Yeah.
If you get
they stink when they steam, that's
they really
the
do. They really do. And so that is the kicker. Usually I'll cut my Brussels sprouts if I can a couple of hours before, and I let them sit out. And that usually vents off a lot of that funky gas. But yeah, air fryer, toss in some butter, throw in some bacon. I'll even throw a little Parmesan cheese in there too, and just let them crisp up. And that's pretty much what I got for sides. I mean, we can talk a little more about some other things, but during like, I know we're going to do quickly about New Year's, but like you could even introduce black eyed peas right now. That would be sure. Apropos. There's some things you can do. A lot of people do collard greens as well, especially for New Year's. Apparently it represents money. And so in some of the Southeast area, US, they'll do collard greens. So that's pretty much what I got for sides. Again, I have most of this stuff on drinkeatlearn.com. Or if you just need anything, you just reach out to me. I'll help you guys out.
And Stoned Land is saying Stone and Land, yeah, is saying is are sweet potatoes keto friendly? No, but yeah. Eat them anyway on Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like, there's a point to let your hair down. I mean, Ken and I don't have any, but like you do it metaphorically anyway, you know.
You know, and on my other world that I do with Blood Sugar Chef, sweet potatoes don't really hit my glycemic index very hard if I cook them less. The more vegetal they are in their state, as soon as they start to caramelize and eat, those potatoes turn straight into starch, and like it just crushes me. I will see my sugar spike. But normally when I just like very quickly steam them, where it's difficult to get my fork in, it's a little different texture. But if I'm craving it, but I can't, when I'm in my first of the year, I'm back on keto hard.
Hardcore.
Yeah, there's no brown sugar at all. I'll just
go. No brown sugar. We got to leave that out. But I found that the purple skinned ones that I grow with the yellow flesh.
Yes.
And they're not sweet.
They're so good.
Like the typical sweet potato you buy in a store. You can find them in stores, by the way. Like Central Market carries them. They're usually labeled Murasaki or Okinawan, and they are not from Okinawa. They were actually developed in the United States, which I just learned. But they are freaking fantastic, and they taste kind of like half sweet potato and half Idaho potato. They're like somewhere in the middle. They taste like you have butter on them when you don't, and those do seem to have a significantly lower glycemic index, and I'm with you on not overcooking them then. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't make those as a mash. I make them more like a baked potato or – sometimes I'll throw them on the grill. Just make planks out of them and grill them. I wouldn't do that for Christmas, but I'll just throw that out there since somebody asked. All right, let's go on to
appetizers.
Let's do some apps. Yeah. I love apps. That keeps people the hell out of my kitchen.
Yeah, and so that's the point. Listen, everyone. You think of the classic Christmas. You're not. People are scattered around and chatting and talking in a fireplace. And usually it's a bunch of kids running around screaming and, football games in the back and everything and stuff. And so the more people can stay out of my kitchen during this time, it's the better, some people aren't blessed with a kitchen that's right near their living room and they're kind of, and that's okay. But like, these are the things that I do that people may turn their nose up at, but I start pushing more of the culinary side because it's Christmas time and I'm not locked into Thanksgiving. So you typically will see a smoked salmon platter in my Thanksgiving Day app. It is a nice way to introduce a little bit of fish or seafood into the mix without going heavy into like,
and before we start, you meant Christmas.
I'm sorry. Yes, yes. What did I say?
You said Thanksgiving.
Oh, shit. Well, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
That is a great way for me to kind of start just putting a little more stuff out there. And actually, right now, you could find some pretty good deals on smoked salmon because people don't really buy it right now. And so they're like, ask your local guy, hey, if I get some smoked salmon, will you cut me a deal? He'll probably say yes. Ask your local producers, hey, because most of the stuff they have in is just sitting there anyway. And so I'll do that, and then I'll usually add in some shrimp cocktail. It is kind of a nice way to just during lunchtime, people want something a little hearty. It's typically something that I can purchase without having to make it.
Yeah.
And it's a price that I'm willing to pay out.
Like a blunt cake clamshell with a cocktail sauce in the middle, and it makes everybody happy, and they feel spoiled. And honestly, it's not really that expensive because it's farm shrimp 90% of the time.
Yeah, and I want you guys to understand, like, as a chef, I could sit here and tell you, you need to make everything from scratch and you need to do everything the hard way. The goal is to please people and not kill yourself in the kitchen. If this podcast was a different podcast about, like, advanced cooking techniques, then we'd be talking a whole different thing. This is about getting people happy.
Yeah.
And if they don't like shrimp, fine. You know what I mean? Like,
salmon.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a bowl of nuts. Get out of the kitchen.
That kind of leads me to the next thing is, you know, on the Thanksgiving segment, I told you guys you should always be doing spice nuts or candied nuts in your oven. It's cheap.
Yeah.
And it's super great way to just have a bowl of something to people to munch on. And it adds to the table the whole like cacophony of all the food you have. It's one more thing that they can add. The other thing I always have is baked brie on my table. It's self-serving, little jams and jellies around it with, again, you're adding good toast points or good crackers.
Yeah.
And I always add it to my charcuterie board.
Yeah.
And so, and typically right now, since I'm into butchering everything, again, I will always go into, you need to have more, sausage, like dried sausage and different things, not just your prosciutto and your different, like, traditional charcuterie. If you want to jazz it up, there's a lot of great processors everywhere across the country that make sausage, dried sausage, breakfast sausage, all these different sausages that are just great to biltong. Hell yes. I cannot represent Anton enough. Like, I love that man. Nikki are just, Nicole are great people, and buy some biltong for Christmas. It is a great way to thing to have on your plate. The other thing I do too is marinated olives.
Okay.
I'll take olives, and if I can get them fresh, I will, or at least not from the store, more bought from like an artisanal person, and I'll drizzle oil, put some herbs, throw them in the oven, and I do that with grapes as well.
In the oven.
Yes. And I just toast them just a little bit in the oven, and let it kind of do its thing. If people are here or there, like, or at my place and I've got time, I will also make, truffled popcorn. So I'll take popcorn, toss it in truffle oil, a little Parmesan and lemon zest. And that's kind of a cool little thing to do. And that's also really good for New Year's Eve. And on that roasted grape one, I'll do, like 2 cups seedless grapes, olive oil, rosemary, salt and pepper, and I bake them in the oven probably about 5-10 minutes ish, and then I basically put them on a platter. In the center, I put ricotta cheese with some toast points, and so you can basically take the grape and kind of smear it with the ricotta, and I'll drizzle it. It usually has some lemon or lemon zest in there, and then another one you can get the kids to do is buy some honeydew. It doesn't have to be sweet because it's out of season. And I'll buy some prosciutto, and I'll have the kids with a melon baller, melon ball a bunch of honeydew, and then they'll basically wrap it in prosciutto, and you drizzle it with a little bit of honey. And those are really cool little fun bites to make that you can usually shove off onto the kids, because that'll get them out of the kitchen or near, you know, basically out of the way. All the other apps kind of are in line with what you can do. You can put deviled eggs on the table. You can put, Jack and I geeked out about all these little mini crostini things that we did and layered it with some sort of like mascarpone and jam with some sort of like nice little meat thing on top. You could reach out to me later. I mean, I didn't want to go heavy on apps. I wanted to give you guys some different things that we hadn't talked about before, but I want to give you guys the confidence that you don't have to be locked into turkey stuffing cranberry again on Christmas. Explore, have a little fun, put smoked salmon with cream cheese and capers and
capers.
Dude, yeah. it's
and bagel crisps.
Yes. I
mean, yeah. It's, and then you don't have to have lox, right? You can just kind of chop up your salmon and let people build their own. And then I know this is pedestrian low end, but the good old fashioned cheese log, right?
Yes.
Like this one here is made with cranberries and pistachios.
Yeah.
Right? They, love that. Come on. You know, it's cream cheese and, you know, whatever, but it's easy, it's quick, and it looks cool. You know, and I don't know what happened. I mean, I remember being a kid. And it didn't matter if we went to an aunt's or a grandparents or friends for like around the holidays. Those things were everywhere back in the '80s. Like everybody made those, or you could also go buy them, like pre-made versions of them. They were all over the place, and that and a lot of other things kind of disappeared, but they're still there if you look hard enough. Like the other thing, like Christmas meals or Thanksgiving, you went into one of my grandparents, and they're very divergent grandparents, so Italian, German on one side. And Ukraine on the other side. But they both would have a big giant bowl of the nuts that you have to crack yourself with the little fiddly things to get the nuts out and a couple nutcrackers. And they still do sell them around this time of year in most grocery stores. It seems like almonds, Brazil nuts, Filberts, whatever. But like, I'm just kind of, as you're saying some of this, I'm thinking about some of the stuff that just kind of disappeared. Yep. It was really common only, what, 30, 40 years ago? Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you know, we're about the age where you're basically my big brother, basically. You know, and so there's these things that are like that I remember growing up that you don't see often. And this is kind of where I tell people, look, this Christmas is a great time to feed people and break bread with people. But it's not the time, if you want to, fine, but this is not the time to do some molecular things. You need to touch the traditional, you know, nerve just as much as enjoy different new traditions, right? Having a cheese log, having braised cabbage, having things that might, where people, oh God, I remember when grandma made this, or those things are just, if not more important than having some of these, you know, different fancy, you know, deviled egg things that you might be trying out. Having these moments where you go, hey, son, daughter, this is what grandma used to make for us during Christmas time, you know? And that to me is almost as really, to me, it's more important as a chef. Don't be worried about like, well, you know, that's too old school, that's too traditional. That's Christmas, man. There's some traditions that need to continue.
It needs to be old school. It's exactly the whole point. Christmas is old school.
Yeah.
Somebody here mentioned Hickory Farms and nostalgia. So yes, because I was a Gen X kid that ran around the mall stealing Hickory Farm samples until they told me not to come back no more. But the others, like my in-laws showed up last year. And they had some summer sausage from Hickory Farms. Well, I think it's pretty, like it's okay. I'm not going to get rid of it, but it's not like, wow. They had this spicy one. And it tasted more like, if you're familiar with Lebanon bologna, like the real stuff from Southeast PA. Kind of like that, but spicy. It was so freaking good. So I tried to find it. Couldn't find it. Went on their website, and I guess they sell whatever's left on the website, really expensive. But now what Hickory Farms does, they do these pop-ups. Kind of like Spirit Halloween, like, you know, like there's a store that's out of business and they're open for like 6 weeks or whatever around the holidays. I bought $85 worth of that shit this year. It is freaking phenomenally good. And the lady in there is like trying to like, we have this. I don't care. I'm here for this one thing. So if you have one of those around you, folks, trust me. Right. Trust me, bro. You can pick that up and it is damn good.
I remember those Hickory Farms, all the blocks of cheeses that were like that hard, like cheese that was like no moisture. Like it was just
food.
Yes. That's what I remember. The other thing that I love seeing when I go, I'll talk about things I can take sometimes just on classic. I'll take little Smokies, right?
Smokies
in a crock pot. Right?
We do that every year too.
Yeah. It's so fun. And then if you do want to jazz it up, have the kids take some pave pastry and make a pig in a blanket, right?
Yeah.
The point is to get involved with the family, or even if you don't have family, have fun with it. It's Christmas. Like don't sweat that you're not doing something from scratch, or it's not, you know, you enjoy the family, not the time in the kitchen where you're striving, you know, stressed away. So
on the old Smokies, this is going to sound weird. A Texan telling people to get barbecue sauce from New Hampshire.
Oof.
But we found this. We did a event up in New Hampshire in February one year. And while we had some time, we drove into North Conway. So this is northern New Hampshire. And there's this little country store up there called Zeb's. And my wife just picked a few things up. And one of the things she picked up was this smoky apple barbecue sauce. We order a case of this a year. Now, half of that case gets used at the workshop. So it's not like we eat a case of barbecue sauce like this every year. But that stuff on those little smokies and one of the little crock pots. It's so stupid simple. Everybody loves it. I don't know what they put in it. I don't want to read the label because I know it's bad. But I also know that it's good. It's good. Yeah.
Speaking of tradition, we'll move into desserts now. Okay. For me, one of the things that I never see anymore, it brings back tons of Christmas tradition, is a Yule log. And a lot of people don't really remember what a Yule log is. It's basically like a, if anybody remembers, the Swiss Miss, rolled, things from, Little Debbie, they're basically, it's basically a, chocolate, you make a chocolate flat pan of like basic cake, chocolate cake, and you put a cream inside of it and then you roll it on itself to make like a rolled log with, has this cream swirl inside of it. And then you basically coat it with more chocolate. Yeah, that's it right there. And you scrape it, and it looks like bark. And then you put cranberries and different things on it, and they put rosemary on it. It's something you don't see anymore, but it is about as traditional Christmas as you can get. And it's so easy to make. And I actually, this year, another plug for her because I love her so much, I'm actually thinking about using some of Nicole's coffee in with the cocoa powder. To make like a coffee cocoa kind of thing. It's going to be kind of fun. I'll see if I'm going to do it. But I'm going to play around with that this year. But those kind of things, Yule logs, are something that you can take. It carries well. It travels well. And it's also a massive showpiece when you bring it out. And it's something you can do, actually, if you had time, up to a week in advance. It would hold really, really well. In fact, the colder the cake it is, unless it's been in the oven, the easier it is to roll up. Mm. And if somebody wants to do this, reach out to me. I got some tips on how you can roll it and stuff like that. Even things simple as like pound cake saves you time. You can make it. It's super easy, but obviously store-bought is great. Bread pudding is another thing. If you're going to the store, bread pudding during Christmas, it's something I would never do during Thanksgiving, but during Christmas, man, bread pudding, warm, especially when it's cold. If you lucky guys are going to be, well, not that cold, but get cold during Christmas time, bring out some like, you know, bourbon glazed bread pudding. I think I have a recipe for online on Drink, Eat, Learn. But that's an awesome thing that you can do. You can make well in advance and just throw it in the oven while dinner's on. And then you've got basically warm bread pudding right then and there. If you're going, you hit me on the head. Hot chocolate needs to be on your list. If you don't know me, every year it's about this time where I'm going, pardon my language, ape shit over people with hot chocolate and cocoa, right? Like, know the difference.
Yeah.
I definitely have something on my Drink, Eat, Learn about this. You're going to hear me be on a soapbox for about 20 minutes reading it, but hot chocolate is like a must for this time of year. Real chocolate. Real cream, real milk, and screw keto, but it is one of those things that if you have it during dessert time, for me, Christmas and chocolate go hand in hand.
Yeah, yeah, and I, like I said, real chocolate, not freaking dump and stir with the marshmallows that disappear the second you do it, like. Yep. Do it right. Get some Godiva. Throw some real sugar in it. It's not hard, right? There's a lot of stuff I think people think is hard, and it's not. It's because you've never seen it. You think it's hard. Like, and there is this magical thing now, Ken. I don't know if you're aware of this. A bunch of scientists got together and linked all the computers in the world, and they made this giant database. It's called the Internet.
Interesting.
And if you don't know how to do something, you go and you ask it, and it tells you. It's pretty crazy. Like, and then there'll even be a video of like some lady in her house showing you how to do it. And it's on demand 24/7. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Try it.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, if you guys want to learn how to make real hot chocolate, drinkeatlearn.com. There is a huge, I'll probably be updating that again. Cause, and then again, we'll get into it. I know Jack, last time we saw you, you had the year old eggnog, that year aged, year aged. If you're not making eggnog right now, you and Dorothy do have, another 32 ounces, being aged right now for next year, and I'll bring it to the workshop. So yeah. I've made my batch already. But if you're not making eggnog, now is a good time to just do it during the holidays, the Christmas
and it's
time.
It's cool to age it long term, but if you make it this weekend, it'll be fine. It's fine. Make more than you need and put one back, you know?
Yeah, it's fine. And then, you know, we're moving. I'll move a little bit into New Year's. I just want to kind of move it along real quick. You know, I think the big thing that I can tell you guys about New Year's right now is, again, I'll funnel you to drinkeatlearn.com, but there's a huge, like, description and understanding of, like, how to buy sparkling wine during this time of year, what to look for, what are the differences if you're going to want to splurge, what to look for if you want value. It breaks it down pretty easily for you and gives you tons of options and instead of going to the store and, you know, you're spending $100 on a bottle and you're not really sure what the heck it is when you probably would be happy with something at $20 a bottle. And so use that as a reference because it's something that you can use. You know, New Year's Eve, again, I think you can use any of these techniques that we've talked about for Christmas. But again, the staple items for me are black eyed peas. I just have to, from the South, I have to have black eyed peas. And then collard greens is a must. And then cornbread.
Cornbread, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you might as well. We lost you, Ken. I think we lost your audio. Yeah. We don't hear you. We don't hear you, Ken. Oh, if you muted yourself. No, your mic's not muted. Did you yank your cord out? Oh, he's gone. He'll be back. If people were commenting on the sparkling wines, and I'll use this until he gets back. I said, you know, the one thing you don't want is Andre. If you're buying a sparkling wine for $2.99 or $3.99 a bottle, maybe $3.49 a bottle now because of inflation, you don't want it. Don't do it. Either buy something decent or get rid of it. Let's see if Ken's back. Can we hear you, Ken? Nope, you are still – we've lost audio. Is there a mute button on that headset somewhere, like in the line? No, you're talking, but we can't hear you. No input. I'm not even registering it on this side, Ken. He does have a kitchen. interesting choices. It's all good stuff except for cranberry sauce. You keep working on it. I'll tell you when you're back. We don't hear you. I gotta keep rolling until you figure this out. Do you have a different headset? I don't know. At $3.99 a bottle, it better be non-alcoholic. That's what Tom says about sparkling wines. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay for the sparkling apple cider or whatever, that you're not going to have any alcohol. Ken, we don't have you. You just have no audio. It was like something you did. Your hand did come down right when it happened. I don't know if that has something to do with it. Let's see. Mute mic, unmute mic.
You there?
Yeah.
All right. Geez, I don't know what the heck. I don't know if
I tried something and I'm going to claim that I fixed it.
All right. All right.
Moderator muted you and unmuted you. And
It was weird.
That worked. I don't know.
Because I had the audio was like the green thing was going up and down. Like I could, it was working, but I just didn't know what was going on. So anyway.
All right.
Sorry about that, guys.
Where were we?
Sparkling. So anyway, you should check it out there. But and then cornbread. We're talking about cornbread.
Oh, that's where you dived.
Cornbread is like a kind of the Southern tradition. They view it as like gold bars of like prosperity and stuff. Yeah. And it was cool. The black eyed peas is a cool story too, where apparently during like Civil War, soldiers would never take, they would never take the black eyed peas because they considered it kind of forage for like livestock and things like that. And during that time, people that were poor and at the time they would eat these black eyed peas and they would feel prosperity because of the amount of plentiful food they had. But
yeah,
it's kind of, I probably butchered that story, but it's pretty much the context of it.
I read that was true, but I also read that one of the things that saved a lot of people in the South when they started like burning the fields and shit is the Northern troops didn't know what a black eyed pea was.
Oh,
So when they would destroy fields and stuff to basically lay siege to places, if they saw that, they would just be like, "Ah, whatever, that's not worth the effort." And so that's it became cool. Something that they still had available. So, yeah, it was like a peasant food, livestock feed, but it also probably became pretty valuable at that point because, well, it was there. There's a book that I pushed a few years ago called Ersatz and the Confederacy. And ersatz is like a cheap substitute, like roasted chicory instead of coffee would be an ersatz. And in that book, at one point, it says something like, at one point, you would be lucky if the butcher had some pork or beef in the window, you know, twice a week. And later, you'd be lucky if he had some rats hanging. So that's how hand-to-mouth some of the areas got during that war. So, yeah, you might feel pretty prosperous if you're sitting down to a giant, you know, thing of black-eyed peas.
Just in general, to kind of finish off, let's talk about besides wine. You know, there's nothing better than coming to your house, into someone's home, and it smells like Christmas, right?
Yeah.
Usually apple, cinnamon, nutmeg, those things are just, you smell like baked bread too is also a big, good one. A way to do that if you're hosting or even if you're actually taking something, if you have a crock pot, again, it's a great vessel to keep things warm in, is doing warm apple cider. Apple cider is mulled wine too is another great thing. Just replace the apples, apple juice with just wine, and it's pretty easy. But you can actually find in most stores, they'll have like spices, like mulling spices, if you look in the spice area. And if you don't, just reach out to me. I can tell you what's in it. But what I do also with that is if I have enough time, I will peel pears, whole pears. And I will poach those pears in that liquid and take it with me. So when I get there, I'm basically pulling the pears out, and they're good for a dessert later on.
Oh yeah, they would be.
And they infuse the liquid into the cider, and the cider infuses the liquid into the pear. And so for me, it's an easy way to kind of bring a beverage and desserts. And I can do halves. The other way I do my poached pears are sous vide. I take little packs. Sometimes I cheat and I just put them in Ziplocs and press the air out. Pear, I'll put whatever I want in it. I even put some bourbon or something in there too, because I know it's going to kind of cook off. And then I just poach my pears for 2 or 3 hours and just let them sit there. And they just get so soft. They don't fall apart. Sometimes I'll do some butter in there too, just to kind of give it a little bit of fatness in there too. Some brown sugar and just kind of make its own little syrup. And it's pretty good. So there's some cool things there. So sous vide is like my best friend sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things we've done is like we'll do a spiced apple cider, and we'll just use like a good, like this time of year, even our Albertsons will have like these jugs of real apple cider, like the big glass 1 gallon jugs. And we'll use that instead of like Mott's or something, and we'll do it up. And then like just to make it simple so the kids can have whatever they want, instead of like spiking the mulled cider, we'll just put like a decent bottle of like apple brandy next to it. If somebody wants to add a little quick hit of that to their, they can, and they don't have to. And that makes it easier. And you're not making two batches of it or what have you. And then, you know, it is the season of spirits in some ways. So like we were talking earlier about like the hot chocolate thing, like little splash of peppermint schnapps in a hot chocolate. That's a whole different realm of things, you know, once you do that. And like, just have fun. Like, that's my big advice. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, this is when you should really be pulling out your Rumpelmints, all the stuff that you typically don't drink during like hot days. Rumpelmints, you know, I'm trying to think of the ones. Port is also another good thing, right? Not this time of year. Drinking that port that I sent you would probably be a good time to finish that off this year, Jack. And I, again, the goal is to be warm, hearty, earthy, kind of just, you know, I don't typically use a lot of bright citric flavors, and it's kind of just, I don't know, homey, frumpy this time of year, but it's good.
I mean, you have to remember, like, and I don't know if you've ever listened to the Christmas special for the show. I talk about the genesis of Christmas in America and how it became what it is. But, you know, there was a certain Thanksgiving, Christmas, both. If we go back to a time before everything is being on demand and most people living some level of agrarian lifestyle, there was kind of this like, not a lot's going to happen after this. We're going to have to live out of the larder. And like, it was also like, let's kind of throw one big party before we go through like January, February. Because like it gets cold here where you and I live in January. Try Northern Pennsylvania in February, dude. And then, you know, some of those people who are living up in New Hampshire, you know, Connecticut, Maine, bro, cold, harsh, short days, long nights. And there was kind of this whole need to kind of have this, like, it's going to be okay moment. And I think when you throw a big feast and you know you're going into that long, dark winter, that's kind of a big part of it. It is like, we're going to be all right. Right. Yeah. We're not going to start freaking out. We're going to like, that's the survivalist component that comes into it. Have some fun. Eat, drink, be merry. You know,
There is a component of that too. I didn't think about till you mentioned that, but every year there's a old man, and his wife, you know, live near me, and they love my rum cake, and I always make cake for him. And, I know it's, you know, it's kind of the segment I was thinking about doing about bartering with alcohol, the gray area, but you know, if you're not doing it now, you're doing it wrong kind of thing. And I know that if I send over a rum cake to them, within 2 to 3 days, their grandson's coming over to hang my Christmas lights on my house.
Oh, okay.
Right. And so
that's a fair trade, man. I'm all in on that one.
And right. And so, you know, these things were like, I'm really big and I know everyone usually is, but start help people this time of year, right? Reach out to people and your neighbors across the street and send them some cookies. And, you know, this time of year, again, we may not be as hard up as some people on homesteads in the past and the beginning of Christmas, but we still need, this is a time of year where you need to look across your neighbor and go, hey, you know, how are things? Here's some cookies. Introduce yourself if you don't have a neighbor. And especially those of you who live in a more of a rural area, a metropolitan area, you don't have to be nosy. You don't have to be a Karen. You don't have to be up in their business all year long. But at least knowing that if there's something when times get tough, or even if they don't, that you've got a community that you're not just reaching out for the first time. And Christmas is usually a damn good time to reach out to somebody. There's an excuse there. So
yeah, I don't even know why this made me think of it. But another thing we do every time this year, I don't buy a lot of candy. I really don't. Like, I'm not a candy guy. But this time of year, the Ferrero Rocher with the hazelnuts, the chocolate round things, and they sell this big flat of them at Costco for like less than you pay for the little tiny thing of them at the grocery store. And I buy one of those every year.
Yeah.
And those are like, I'd say we got a 50-50 split in the family, which is fine with me. Like 50% of people like that, whatever. And then the other 50% are like, oh, I'm going to hammer those things.
For us, it's fudge. We make fudge every year. We make fudge every year. And so we go around to our neighbors and all of my employees and all that stuff. They know they're going to get a big batch of fudge. And again, it's kind of showing people that this time of year you gotta take care of those around you. So anyway,
I wonder if Ken Berry's ears are bleeding right now. You know. So you got any other stuff you want to cover before we like kind of wrap? Or,
that's all I got, man. I if anyone has questions, but you know, you could get into all kinds of different sides. And again, if this was a different podcast, this is more of just kind of giving you guys some ideas on what you can do. You guys always know you have me as a resource. I'm actually got amazingly. I've got 4 days off this next week, which I haven't had in forever. Butchery has been amazing, but I'm going to take those days. But if you guys need something leading up to that, you guys can reach me on Telegram. You guys know where to find me. But yeah, questions if you have them.
Cool. Yeah, I've got a few, and if you guys have any more, now is the time. And do them just like Kevin did. That'll make it easy for me to find it when I come back to the other side. Question in all caps, followed by the question. He says, my mom has celiac and really can't eat gluten. Any recommendation for good gluten-free baked goods recipes?
You know, yes and no. I mean, it's going to be – I'm going to quickly state this. I'm kind of one of these weird, like, if you can't have it, it's just not worth it kind of. Sometimes these gluten-free – like King Arthur is a flour maker. They have a gluten-free one. You can substitute, and what they're doing is they're taking like potato starch and other like binders and different agents to kind of coagulate this starch into something. I found the best application for those are things like cobblers, because I know that let me put it this way: the mouthfeel of most gluten-free things are difficult to replicate when they are like bread or like cake and stuff. But somehow when you put them into like a cobbler or even like a crisp or something like that, they tend to do better. You have to be weird about butter. What happens is the butter, definitely butter, no margarine or oil or crap like that. What happens is that those, you need that fat in the butter to help bind that non-gluten things. There's emulsifiers in that, the gluten-free flours that need fat and water, and butter is almost the perfect medium for that. But honestly, I would take any, I would probably go on to, I shouldn't plug because I don't know that they're good. King Arthur is like the predominant flour place that I get my stuff as a chef. They have a gluten-free flour. Now, celiac is a whole different world, right? Where if there's any bit of gluten, she's having issues. So buyer beware. I mean, I know that sounds kind of scary, but read your labels. But I would try to introduce those gluten-free items into things that I know are going to be more of a wet base, like a cobbler, even some pies, but be careful with that. So
I hope that helps. You know, earlier you were talking about cornbread, if it's just made with cornmeal.
Yeah, cornbread is another option where I definitely do a sweet, like if you're looking for something sweet, I've done a sweet cornbread before, which is really fun. Also, beware that some of these cornbread, cornmeal stuff, the mix has a flour base or flour in there that could cause problems. But, you know, those kind of things, stuffed cornbread or cornbread, sweet cornbread is a great idea, Jack. Definitely a great idea.
And then one of the few things that's more like a dessert thing that is actually really good are the flourless chocolate cakes. And there's no gluten because there's no flour at all. And is it like real cake? Nah, but it's – and like there's no secret to that one. Just literally Google or search for flourless chocolate cake. And it's a pretty simple process to make that. And then your gluten people can – have something more dessert-like, and your non-gluten people will eat the shit out of it. If you like chocolate, you will not kick that out of bed.
You know, Jack, there was also something we did last year that I forgot about that when you talked about it, making those forgotten cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Those are a great option for basically it's basically egg whites, and you mix in your sugar and everything, and you basically turn the oven on and then turn it off and just leave it in there overnight.
Yeah.
And it's a really cool – it's a different texture, but it's really sweet. They're sweet and they're delicious.
They're like a crunchy marshmallow.
Yeah.
That's how I would describe them. Like, and if you get them just right, kind of, they're like that crunchy, but the center is still a little wet.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you hit them perfect. That's usually, like you said, to like the two, I don't remember. So whatever's on my wife's recipe card, 250 degrees. You put them in the oven. As soon as you put them in the oven, you turn the oven off and they sit overnight. Or I think you do it for 20 minutes and then turn the oven off and leave them in there. And the forgotten thing is they were forgotten in the oven.
Yeah.
And, we make usually we haven't done it this year. We usually make a batch of those every year. I'll have to ask my wife if she wants to do it. They're, by the way, they're even better with duck egg whites.
Oh, damn. Didn't think of that.
Yeah. Stone and Land says, are Yule logs also done with like red velvet cake? I think I've had that cold. Don't know why you wouldn't. Yeah, I think I might do that. Red velvet cake's some good shit.
Yeah. In fact, I've done a variable, a couple of these where I did red velvet cake. But typically when I do the frosting, I'm doing like a white frosting versus a chocolate one. And so what's kind of cool
buttercream.
Though. Yeah, but I can do a really cool, like a different bark texture. I you guys know all the trees. I think it's like a white with a, I basically put dark chalk shavings that kind of like lay up on the bark. So it looks like, I guess it's like a willow or some white.
Birch.
Yeah, you guys know the trees. So it looks like a white birch tree because I'm using black chocolates. And the other thing you can do too, I've seen designs on the white. You can get stencils, and then basically you cover. It's kind of a reverse image. You put the stencil on the cream, and then you basically shake the entire thing with red, and you take it off, and there's like a white snowflake on it.
Oh, that's cool.
So there are some cool variations of it. But yeah, you could use really whatever simple bread, simple cake batter. You know.
When you mentioned the Yule log and I looked it up in that pinwheel design, this is not a Christmas thing, though we had plenty of it at Christmas. But my grandmother made these year round. My grandmother, my Ukrainian grandmother, used to make these nut rolls. She also made poppy seed rolls. Mm-hmm. But the nut rolls, those, like, I'm now jonesing for that, and I'll probably never have one exactly like she used to make because all of her stuff just died with her.
Yeah,
like there was problems in the family. I'll just leave it at that. And no one really knows how to make them the way that she did. And you know, it's sad too because she was not that grandmother's like, and you'll never find out. Like, she'd tell anybody you want to know how to do it. Yeah. But you know, people are busy and they have things to do. And Catherine makes it, so we don't have to worry about it. I really wish, like, I learned a lot about what I know about cooking from her with things that are not beef.
Yeah.
Old school Ukrainian women of that era were terrified of any piece of meat that was not completely obliterated cooked because, you know, they grew up at a time when there was no refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, but when it was anything like a baked good or like something that you'd find over like a stew or like a chicken pot pie or something where like you're going to fully cook it anyway, man, that woman was friggin' magic with, and pierogies. Real pierogies, not Mrs. T's bullshit. Yeah. Real handmade, like make the dough, make the filling, cut them out, pinch them shut, all of that. She'd make like, I have no idea, dozens and dozens per batch, and then freeze them, and then that way you could just take them out and eat them whenever you wanted to.
Hey Stone, real quick, most of the times you're having this Yule log, they're going to be cold or room temperature. If it's warm, all that stuff kind of leaches out.
Melts, right? Because it's like you got some icing in the middle, right? Kevin says, do you use freeze-dried ingredients for dry rubs you make?
Where's Jake at, huh? Where's Jake at? Realistically, freeze-drying is just any ingredient that's got its moisture, which is basically what most spices are anyway.
Dried instead of freeze-dried.
Correct. I have not. I typically don't use. I want to, but I typically don't use a lot of freeze-dried stuff. But it's basically the same premise. You're just getting there the same way. There are some things that I've been wanting to play around with, and Jack and I were talking about this when we were in our mushroom phase. Is I'm trying to use mushrooms as an enzymatic process to tenderize meat. Mm. And I've been trying to figure out a way to do that with some freeze-dried mushrooms. But it's, you know, butchery has been taking a lot of my time for me. But you really could. I don't really see why you couldn't use freeze-dried.
I mean, I know that when you rehydrate anything, whether it's freeze-dried or whether it's just dried, which is what most people don't freeze-dry an herb because you don't really need to. I don't know that you gain that much. Like freeze-drying a shrimp versus drying a shrimp, I get that. But I think the extraction from a dried herb does lend a lot of flavor, so a freeze-dry would probably work well as well. But what I like to do if I have fresh herbs is I'd rather do my rub using fresh herbs, but I make basically an herb salt.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take, like, with the turkey, I'll do sage with the salt, or my pork loin, I'll do sage with the salt. But, like, with, like, a rub for a piece of beef, I'll do, like, rosemary and thyme and garlic and salt. And then if I have all those herbs fresh, I'll run them and chop them up in a food processor and mix them in with the salt. And then the salt from that osmotic process pulls that moisture out with the flavor. And then the salt hangs onto it as the moisture evaporates. And to me, you get a really good rub that way. And you get a really good flavor transfer that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like one of those little hacks over the years that I've picked up. And I had a guest on it talking about just making herb salts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I know how to do it that.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause like, I think it might even have been your predecessor. It might've been Keith Snow that it was like, well, what do you do with leftover shit? Like you buy parsley and whatever you're doing with it doesn't really lend itself to the stems. Cause you can use it like a stew, just chop them up, throw them in a stew, and we'll just chop them up and make a parsley salt.
Yeah.
And I think it was him that said that. When I was like, oh, I have an idea now.
The one time I do use freeze-dried stuff in ingredients, it's not Christmas time, but it's when I'm doing I make my own seafood stock or seafood powder, where I know I can regulate how much salt is in it, and I'll take shrimp and I'll use freeze-dried shrimp and then pulverize them, and so that I know that I'm getting a wicked strong bouillon without tons of salt or anything other MSG or anything in it. That's, so, but that Christmas time, I really don't do rubs that much or on freeze dried stuff. So,
yeah. Well, man, this has been great. If you got anything else,
before we wrap up, because I don't see any more questions.
No, man. Listen, if you guys need me, obviously you can reach out, drinkeatlearn.com, bloodsugarchef.com, and then Telegram. I'm always on there. Well, I try to always be on there. If you just, you know, at me so that it bings my notifications. I try to get back to people as soon as possible. No, things are good, man. I'm going to be eager for some days off. Butchery has been good. And then if you guys are interested for me adding that to my skill set, this whole taxidermy thing, I'm thinking about getting into it. If that's something on the expert council, you guys think you might want someone to learn about that, I'm game. So just reach out to me and let me know your thoughts on that. So
pun intended or not, it was there. he's game.
Yeah.
Butchery and taxidermy.
I'm glad you caught that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, I got all of Ken's stuff, his sites and his social media, in the audio show notes, probably about 30 minutes after we finish the live version of this. The link that's down there in the video notes will be live. You can get over there and grab everything. Ken, if there's anything that came out today you specifically want me to link to, shoot that over to me by email after we sign off, and I'll get that added as long as I don't forget. I've been forgetting a lot of shit lately. It's been a busy-ass year. Yeah. I too, am looking forward to the time off. I tell the folks right now, get your full of the Santa Jack beard. Because you got tomorrow is expert panel, so it's not video. You got Monday next week, and I got presents delivering and a sleigh load up. I gotta get out, so I won't be back till first week of January. So hey guys,
Merry Christmas, guys.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. And if you want into the AI course, yes, that Monday next week, it's gonna go on sale. It's gonna go like that, like it always does. So you get registered for it if you're not. That's
I cannot recommend that course. No, I was the first round. It has been something I go back to again and again and again. It probably doesn't need to be sold anymore because everyone loves it so much. But I'm telling you right now, if you're debating about it, it is something that I highly recommend. It's been great for my productivity and my sales.
The results that have come back from students has been beyond my expectations. So I feel really good about it.
Thank you.
And anyway, we were gone for the Christmas. And so like, take the heart we said today about enjoying yourself, enjoy your family, have friends, and by gosh, no fucking politics, okay, folks, right? Like, yeah, he couldn't get to the end without dropping an F-bomb, but no politics during this shit. It'll only come back to bite you. No good will come from it, and you won't convince it, and no airing of grievances, right? This is not, if you want to air your grievances, call them around March 15th. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good time to do it. Right. Yeah. Not during the holidays. Ken, thank you for being here, man. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, man.
And thank you for the eggnog. We didn't really talk about eggnog. Folks, make some eggnog.
Yes.
The Ken Daniels way. I'll make sure that recipe is linked today in the show notes as well. Take care.
Thank you. Gonna bail you out, just run you around. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.